Hi, I'm Mackenzie Atwood. Welcome to Steven Selects, as we spotlight some of the fan-favorite, pivotal episodes of the show with some of the Crooniverse members who helped create them. And today, writers Matt Burnett and Ben Levin join us once again to give us an inside look at Storm in the Room from Season 4.
Thanks again for protecting Beach City while I was gone, Connie.
No problem. And now that you're back from space, I officially relinquish control of your bed to you.
Thank you for keeping it warm, sir.
And we've got another Q&A segment with Steven Universe storyboard artists Jeff Liu and Joe Johnston. They're answering a few more of the questions you guys sent into my Twitter, MK Atwood, and to the official Cartoon Network Twitter. So here we go with Matt and Ben. Thank you guys so much for being here again.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. No problem.
For sure. So today we're going to be talking about Storm in the Room. I think that episodes like Storm in the Room, they sort of, you know, they take a break from the main plot to allow the characters time to just process everything that's happening. Because this was right after the zoo extravaganza arc that it was very, probably emotionally distressing for Steven. So how does your approach differ for those kinds of episodes?
Well, I think that we, in writing these arcs, we sort of, or we're getting into this mode where it's like, we plan out these big events happening that we're going to show and that'll span over a few episodes. But, you know, we can't like keep, you know, just the engine like at full blast. That's not a correct metaphor, but we can't just keep going like full steam. I think that's what it would be all the time, because I think it would be just exhausting for the viewers and the production and everybody if we were just constantly in just action battles. And I think that what's important and what I think makes Steven Universe an interesting show is that it's pretty in tune with the characters' feelings and emotions. And so we use these kind of calm down periods after these big events to sort of show how the characters react to it, you know, show what the fallout might be from something or a decision that was made during one of those episodes, and really make sure we're exploring how everyone feels and, you know, what the reality is of being in those situations.
Yeah. And it's like these quiet episodes of the show, you know, I was going back and reading the premise and the outline for it, and it's like it wasn't as – we always start these episodes just a little louder than they are, and then they always get quieted down in the final product. Because in the outline, like when his mom creates the storm in the room – or he creates it, I guess – that was more of an action beat and more of a struggle, and there was just more – like more for Steven to physically do. But like, yeah, it's like that's not what this episode is about, so we often will kind of – try and put those things in there to feel like if we need them, but they inevitably get stripped out because, like, yeah, in particular, this episode is like a quiet episode about emotionally unpacking everything from the zoo arc and several episodes before that.
You must have a lot to think about after your space adventure. You almost lost your dad. And all that stuff about the diamonds and your mom? I'd understand if you need some space.
Nah, the last thing I need right now is more space.
Okay, so what do you want to do?
Yeah, I think that like one image that was definitely the key to this episode, like we were talking about it, and like it's obviously about Steven conjuring up his mother in Rose's room and talking to her. But the thing that like from the beginning was like that moment of Steven taking off his earrings.
Yeah, alone in a bathroom.
In a bathroom, taking off earrings, looking in the mirror, taking off his earrings. That was something Rebecca was like, oh, I want that feeling. We want this. Like, I feel like we worked towards that from so far away. So that was like something we were writing towards. But overall, the episode, that's an important part of the episode too. In addition to him talking to his mother, it's like about Steven just being like, oh, Connie, don't leave. Hey, let's hang out some more. And then she's like, I got to go, and I've got a mom. And he's like, oh.
I got a mom.
I'm all alone. That part is really interesting. It's just such an interesting feeling after any sort of big event, whether it be fun or, you know, stressful. There's that moment afterwards where you're just sitting there by yourself, and it's kind of weird because everything is suddenly quiet. And that's what, you know, a lot of that episode is leading up to taking off earrings in a mirror.
Right, yeah. I felt like a lot of the... It was surprising to me rewatching it because, like I said, you know, do you remember the climax of the episode when you're thinking about it? So I'm thinking about, you know, Steven on the floor, Rose with the storm and everything, and that moment. But it's surprising because, like, there's so much, like you said, that builds up to that. I really felt the three-act structure when I rewatched it that you guys talked about. So, like, how do you go about making sure that it feels like you give it time to sort of simmer before they start, you know, getting to the meat of the action?
okay, so we knew that we were in a place where we were going to have Steven try and talk to his mother in the room, even though he knows that the room is just always conjuring up, like, false things.
Hey, room. It's been a bit, huh? Is that a new cloud? So, I suppose you're wondering why I'm here. I know nothing in here is real, but I want to see my mom.
We were working towards that idea, but the episode couldn't just be that idea. It needed to have sort of a bigger arc to it. And I think the arc of the episode is Steven feeling this sort of emptiness. He tries to go in to the room to sort of answer some questions and fill that void, but ultimately, you know, finds himself feeling that emptiness again. But then his family comes in at the end with pizza, and they're all back, and he feels full.
Dad! Amethyst! Garnet! And Pearl, too?
They were all out of pepperoni, by the way, so I just got you mushroom. I hope that's all right.
It's perfect.
That, you know, we needed sort of that arc, and so that's how that sort of, you know, that structure fits into it, of like having this quietness at first and setting up Steven's problem, setting up him trying to like solve this problem with another, you know, with going into this room and then coming out and finding a solution in a different place. I mean, he ultimately does not find everything, in, you know, that he's looking for in this episode. He doesn't answer all of his questions, but he has some sort of small sense of relief at the end. Sorry if that didn't answer your question. I was just rambling about.
No, it definitely did.
That's the sort of structure of the episode within the thing that we wanted to hit, which is, you know, what would it be like if Steven talked to his mom in the room, which I feel like we saw people,
yeah,
you know, wonder about online, you know.
And wonder about on the crew, too. I remember having conversations with people about, like, that would be the first thing I would ask for. Like,
yeah. Okay. And I don't know if we... I don't think it came up earlier. Like, I don't think it ever felt right earlier for him to do that, because I think that would be such a big this is so heavy, and there's so much emotional weight to that, that, you know, it makes sense. I think the first thing he would do in there is just, like, goof around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got a mm-hmm. playground like that, you know, you wouldn't be like, oh, my God, let me have this super intense heart-to-heart with my mom, who I've never met. You would be like, I want to make a slide, and then maybe get to that stuff later. So he had to be in a special place for this, I feel like, to happen.
Yeah, I think he never knew his mom. He only knew her through stories. So he misses her, but she's not a person he ever knew. And so it's a little bit different than, like, oh, I feel like for him, like, it's not something he had that he wants back. He just never had it. So it's not something he would immediately jump to, like, oh, I want to see that person again. And then also early on in the show, she's like a very intimidating figure to him, because in the beginning of the show, he's constantly feeling like everyone wants him to be like her, and he's not even close to being like her.
For my whole life, I've been hearing stories about you, about how amazing you were, that you were so kind and loving. And every time I'd see the painting of you hanging in the temple, I'd be inspired and reminded of how much I had to live up to. I've even thought about dyeing my hair pink more than once.
It's intimidating to invite that in. So, and also, yeah, he's just a kid, and you just find a magic wishing room. So, yeah, you wish for some silly things at first. But then, like, yeah, as he's matured and the story kind of took us to a place where she wasn't necessarily as intimidating anymore, because he was finding out things about her that diminished her or caused him to question her decisions. That's when, you know, he felt kind of strong enough to approach her.
Yeah, or felt the need. Because I think that was also one of the caveats for any time we do one of these episodes, is like his gem would have to glow and open the door, and he would have to have a strong emotional feeling that would bring him to that. And so I think when we're talking about, like, coming off of these arcs, the thing that you learn in the Human Zoo arc is just another layer of complexity to Rose, in that you're seeing this other side of the diamonds. You know, I think that you knew that she had shattered Pink Diamond, but then you see Blue Diamond mourning it. And that just adds another layer of confusion to Steven, because, you know, their diamonds are humanized a little bit from more than what they were before. You saw Yellow Diamond, she's pretty harsh, and you'd seen the story of Blue Diamond, but now you're seeing Blue even relate to Greg, you know, about loss. And so that kind of makes Rose even more confusing to him. And makes it the pull to go talk about her and talk to her even stronger.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I was going to ask about that because it just seems like, but the connection you made was makes it so much more sense about how the diamonds are becoming humanized, which makes them question it. Because it was like, you know, the arc with the zoo and everything, that involved his dad more than anybody, but it all comes back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think his conflict is, like, his internal conflict, do you think that it's more of one of coming to terms with the fact that, like, there's shades of gray when it comes to, like, morality, and Rose wasn't one or the other, and he can't really categorize it? Or do you think it's more, like, understanding his own, like, who he is as a result of that?
I think it's that he is seeing that the world is more morally ambiguous, and up until this point, I mean, he's modeled himself after Rose based on the stories he was told, in which she's like this stalwart of the downtrodden and you know, looking out for the little guy and always doing the right thing, and oh, she's so perfect. And then to find out that, like, even she was kind of mired in this world of gray, you know, and like the stuff with Bismuth too, of like, you know, even within the Bismuth episode, it's not clear cut. Like, she's not wrong. She's just presenting a different point of view that, you know, it's challenging for Steven. And at the end of that episode, he feels like, you know, he lands on like, okay, she was incorrect about what she wanted to do. But then finding out that then his mom did the exact same thing, it's just like, you know, he modeled himself after his mom to a degree, and then to find out that, like, oh, I'm completely wrong about who she was, is it, I think it then becomes a question of, like, who am I? Like, am I her? And do I kind of have to carry on that, like, kind of complex moral grayness that she had? Or have I really fashioned myself into someone who's stronger and different and will make different decisions than she made?
I've been, thinking about you a lot lately. More than usual.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the show is about just identity
mm-hmm.
in general.
Yeah.
And Steven's identity, you know.
Right.
Is a huge, huge piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can't really separate them. Like, I guess this is what I'm hearing is, like, you can't really separate Steven's identity from, like, Rose's ambiguity because, like, they're the same. They're kind of the same person in some ways, you know?
Yeah, at this point, he's just been so, she's been so intrinsically tied to who he thinks he's supposed to be that, yeah, it's complicating his identity issues.
Mm-hmm. So one last thing I was thinking about is there's a lot of, the moment with the earrings you guys were talking about, it reminded me of some other stuff we'd seen earlier in other episodes where he sort of is like taking a moment to just like, you know, the show's just taking a moment to twist the knife in our heart, and Steven's like thinking about his mom. It reminded me of something that happened in Nightmare Hospital, I think is the name of the episode, mm-hmm. where at the end of the episode he sees Connie and his mom, and her mom, and he looks at the sword and he sort of just like thinks, you know,
yeah, right.
He doesn't really know how to feel about her. So, why did Connie's relationship with her mom specifically led him to start thinking about Rose?
I'm coming in! Connie! Mom!
Yeah, I mean, he's feeling, I think it's one of those just puzzle pieces of Steven's feeling a little like he just went through something big and he doesn't want to be alone. And then, you know, ironically enough, Connie's mom comes in to take her home. He sees them have this warm interaction, and it kind of makes him think about the things he doesn't want to think about when he's alone, you know, and so he's left alone to kind of think about these harder questions, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, as the show has dealt with serialization, like the zoo arc is one where every episode is just running into the next, and we kind of wrote that specifically as like an event that is going to be able to have cliffhangers, and we can kind of just pick up the next episode without recapping too much. But other than those very specific events, we do try and like make every story function within its single episode. And I think the inclusion of Connie's mom was a way to kind of bring up those serialized elements from previous episodes about Steven's mom without having to then just start with Steven being like, oh, remember this. I'm thinking about all these things that you didn't see. Right. Having her mom there is like within that episode, if you know, they say every episode might be someone's first. So within that episode, you're a little bit more clued in and able to track the story with the Connie mom stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I think we, and there was a sort of struggle to figure out how much we had to have him verbalize and stuff and how much it could just be looking at that portrait. And I think that we struck a good balance. But yeah, you know, everything has to, we try and tell a complete story, even though it is a big arc.
Yeah.
Can I say one thing? That one that I love the episode rewatching it is that we were able to do is when Rose talks about sports.
Oh, yeah.
That all sports are beautiful.
Steven, all sports are beautiful. Each sport is a unique experience. The adrenaline, the glory, the sheer feats of athleticism. Each one so complicated and yet exactly the same.
That was so fun to like.
Is that a straight lift from the video like, she made for Steven and like we just find replace sports?
Yeah, it was just this. That was the funnest thing to be able to write, like, this weird version of Rose who's just talking about sports in the same way she talks about the beauty of life.
Yep. Yeah.
Right, because that's the only thing he really knows about her, so she's just, like, filling in those.
Yes.
This is how she is with everything.
I just want to say I really, I like that we got to do that.
Super funny.
Yeah, I like it, too. Thank you guys so much for coming and talking to me.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Okay, storyboard artists Jeff Liu and Joe Johnston are coming up to answer a few of your questions. Thanks to everybody for sending in questions for the Crooniverse, and Joe Johnston and Jeff Liu are back for a few more. Our first question comes from Cameron, and it's about Stevani. How does the crew fuse dialogue between Connie and Steven? Like, how do you get the mix?
I feel like when I write Stevani, I just kind of have Stevani alternate between Steven and Connie's voice.
Hmm.
Like, if there's something Stevani has to react to, it'll be one very, like, analytical and serious kind of response, and then maybe a goofy one, just, like, switching back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can be hard to sort of, especially with some of the other fusions, like Alexandrite, it's kind of hard to marry sort of everyone together, unless they have a very, very specific goal, say, like, if they're fighting another character, then they're all unified in a fight, and so they all speak with one voice. But then, as other things start to draw each character's attention, you start to hear each one of their voices come out of the character, I think. Yeah.
All right, we got a question from Rebecca. Not that Rebecca, different Rebecca. In your experience, what was more beneficial in improving your storyboard skills? Was it like making your own animations or comics?
Well, I never really did comics. I got into storyboarding through animation, and I made several films at art school. So that was like really good experience with practicing storyboarding and just taking an idea from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, when I started on Steven Universe, I really did not have that much experience with storyboarding. So I was really like learning as I was going and just doing like hundreds and hundreds of storyboard panels over the course of several years. Like, that's the best way to get good at anything is just to do it a bunch and just don't give up. Don't fall into like your own doubt and just keep trying.
Yeah. Jeff and I came from the same school and we were supposed to make films every year. And definitely making a film gives you that sort of, you said it already. It's beginning to end, taking it all the way through and finishing it.
Yeah. I think it's easy when you're by yourself, just trying to learn to like have all this ambition and inspiration to try to make something, but to just only kind of get through the planning part of it and not to fully go all the way through. And I think just when you have the experience of completing something, it really allows you to kind of look back on your experience and then like see what mistakes you made and how you can learn from them and like how to move forward.
I think when it comes to like comics and films, you get different experience from doing either. And so like for comics, I think you get a very good experience with writing and joke telling. Whereas doing a film, you get experience sort of figuring out tone and pacing, which is a big part of storyboarding when you're thinking about how the whole thing is going to flow together, which you don't really think about with comics. You're sort of tracking how the reader is sort of following the panels, but you're not thinking about how long a scene is or how long this line is and what the acting is during the line.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big part of storyboarding.
I think the cool thing about comics, though, from what I've observed about other artists, is that it's so writing focused and like people become really good at telling stories that way. And that's a skill that for me, as coming from an animation background, I had less experience with.
Mm-hmm.
I had more experience with the like filmmaking, like cinematography, editing, animation side.
Yeah, me too. So like with comics, I think you get more writing experience because you can make comics much faster than you can make animation.
Yeah, yeah.
And films, it's much, much, much faster. So that's an added benefit.
Okay, cool. All right, here's a question from Alberto. What are your favorite jokes that you had to cut, if you can remember?
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, there was a frog in Serious Steven, episode, what, two? Or
well, it's the second one we boarded. It was like episode 8 or 7.
Yeah, I wrote a song where Steven, or the gems fight a giant frog corruption monster, and then he sings a song about it. That was cute. I wouldn't say it was my favorite, though. That was like the early days. I was still learning.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Good talking to you again.
Thanks. You too.
And if you have a question for the Crooniverse, tweet them to me at MK Atwood or to the official Cartoon Network Twitter. And please remember to use the hashtag Steven Universe Podcast and watch episodes of Steven Universe on Cartoon Network or the Cartoon Network app. The Steven Universe Podcast is produced by Charles Abadje, Stacey Pera, and Conrad Montgomery. Special thanks to Rob Sorcher, Cartoon Network Studios, and the Crooniverse. Join me next week as writers Ben Levin and Matt Burnett return to give us a behind-the-scenes look at Mirror Gem and Ocean Gem. And be sure to subscribe to the Steven Universe Podcast at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please leave us a 5-star rating and review while you're there. I'm Mackenzie Atwood. See you next Thursday.